The global supply chain is strained. One essential transportation network continues to keep the economy connected 24/7. That network is FreightRail. We're increasing hiring and capacity, all while investing more than $20 billion per year into our network to improve reliability every day. We never stop working to better serve our customers because FreightRail works.
As long as I continue to make everything look pretty and shiny on the outside, I didn't care how miserable and ugly I felt on the inside. I realized that I deserved a better me, so I can be the wife and the mom that I really wanted to be.
If you're ready to get real about addiction treatment, call Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
What's up? What's up? It is Cannabis Insider. How's it going on this fine Tuesday, my wonderful friend Javier Jase?
How's it going? How's it going? What do you think of the new logo up there? Do you like it?
Oh, I love it, man. I mean, I love it, of course, but I'm digging the leaf is like got some dimensions going on to it. Inside cannabis, maybe inside the cannabis leaf. There's some the cave allegory here going on with our with our logo. Money Mitch, what's up? Super excited you guys are here. Drop a one in the chat if you all have seen us before. Drop a two in the chat if this is your first time on Cannabis Insider. You know, I just want to see who is out there. But Javier, how you been, man? You in a new setting today?
Doing great. Yeah, no, just different parts of the house. We just
different parts of the house. Love it, man. So honestly, I feel like this week there's been a ton of cannabis news, but not a lot of cannabis news on stocks.
Exactly.
Like there's not a lot of news.
There's interesting stuff going on anyways. Yeah. You know, Elliot, you're in New York, so this might interest you, but now New York doctors can recommend marijuana to all patients who can benefit from it. So, and like most other U.S. states, and more similar to the program down here in Argentina, for instance, you know what? It's up to each physician to determine what is a qualifying condition, right? There's no official list of these are the conditions that you can prescribe cannabis for, right?
Great.
So that is a very big move.
It's wonderful, wonderful news for those that provide cannabis to the New York market. And when I think of companies that are in the New York market, let's relate this back to what we do best, which is financial news. Think of Columbia Care, right? CCHWF on the OTC, major New York medical cannabis provider, and will be recreationally as well. Ironically, think of MedMen for the moment, at least, MMNFF.
You were thinking about something about MedMen.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah.
That is an interesting one.
This is interesting news, guys. I don't know. So let's back up. Let's give a holistic picture to this, right? So MedMen and Ascend Wellness sign a definitive agreement for Ascend to acquire MedMen's New York assets. This was at a much cheaper price than it would be today because Governor Hochul has moved cannabis legalization forward much quicker than Governor Cuomo was. So now MedMen's assets that they're basically at a discount to Ascend. So to quote the New York Post, MedMen wanted to wriggle out of this deal and they do not want to work under this deal. That's not my word. Just making sure the context is there. They're looking to wriggle out of this deal. Ascend was very public. If you all followed this the past couple of weeks, they've been very public about keeping MedMen in line. They have complained to the New York Cannabis Office of Management. They've complained publicly via Twitter. They filed a lawsuit against MedMen so that they would have to adhere to the transaction. So a few days, this is new news, as of, I believe, yesterday, a few days before MedMen was able to wriggle away, and a few days after Governor Hochul hosts a fundraiser, Ascend Wellness CEO receives an email approving or siding, I guess, with Ascend, essentially. So Ascend Wellness would be able to would have the backing of New York for this transaction to go through. MedMen files a countersuit against Ascend Wellness for political influence, and I'm assuming the word there would be tampering. So this is
curious. Very curious, especially considering what Adam Bierman, former CEO of MedMen and co-founder of MedMen, told us just last week. By the way, go to our YouTube channel, Benzinga, and check out the interview with Adam Bierman. He goes into the topic of lobbying at length. He really, really analyzes this. He shares a lot of what they did in the past. And MedMen has also been very, very active on the political front.
Yes. I mean, since 2017, in the public landscape, but even before that, it's a lot, man. And honestly, these are two very well-known companies. And before this, I mean, even after this, maybe we'll see Ascend Wellness is a very, very well thought of MSO, multi-state operator in the U.S. cannabis space. MedMen, they have a Tilray owns 20%. Via an investment into MedMen. So this affects companies on a very large level. Not just these two stocks on the OTC, but you have NASDAQ Tilray that is potentially looking at stepping back from their, I mean, maybe not completely stepping back from their investment, but, you know, I think there's a lot of conversations that are about to be had depending on the result of this conundrum. Anyways, that's a high level of what's going on in New York. Crazy as always. New Yorkers are New Yorkers. Javier, let's do a few more news items before we bring our guest on. Very excited. We're going to have Dave Belsky, CEO of Flower Hire, who has a really, really nice network and solid insights into what's happening employment-wise and leadership-wise in the cannabis industry.
Definitely. Definitely a great chat to have. And honestly, I just want to jump into it, right? Quick shout-outs. There's a cool documentary on Shakari Richardson that will premiere at the Sundance Film Festival. A recent poll conducted by YouGov and The Economist showed that nearly 60% of Americans think President Biden will not keep his promise to decriminalize cannabis. I think that those are the two biggest ones. And a couple exclusives on Benzinga today. House of Saka, it's launching its products in Michigan, and CRB Monitor, Tier 1 Financial Solutions partner to launch a new anti-money laundering and cannabis compliance solution for financial institutions. That is
House
a very
of Saka is a cool one. House of Saka is a really cool one. Cool beverage or cannabis beverage. I think wine, right? If I'm not mistaken, Javi?
Yeah, infused wine from Napa Valley. Super cool.
That's one to keep an eye out.
If you have tried Can is definitely one of the best drinks out there, but Saka is also right out there, in terms of taste and consistency, and it's a luxury product, dude.
It's a great cool. I think we've interviewed them on here before as well, so that's back in the archives. I did want to shout out Money Mitch, K-E-R-N, shouting out Akerna and our friends over there. I've always been bullish on Akerna, and bullish on the story, the fundamentals, and the place of Akerna in the industry. There is, in my opinion, no public competitor to them in the industry.
True. No, totally true. I mean, there's private companies, but none are directly investable. This is a very interesting company, not investment advice. By the way, today they put out a very cool report. We are nicely featured there. So go check it out. Go to benzinga.com/cannabis. Check out news on Akerna. You'll find the report there.
And let's get Jessica back on here. Let's get Jessica on here in March. I'll reach out.
I'll make a point of scheduling her for March around South by Southwest. By the way, if anyone of you is attending South by Southwest in Austin, come check us out. I'll be speaking at a couple panels, one on the future of cannabis with Canopy Growth and Fake Popcorn. Our psychedelics, lead of psychedelics, Nathan Ponyaman, will also be at South by Southwest, talking about psychedelics and the future of psychedelics. And our features writer, Andrew Ward, will be there as well. So come join us, say hi, check out our panels.
There's no three better thought leaders in the space, y'all. Definitely stop by and say hi, and I might even be there. We'll see. Anyways, Javi, shall we jump into a wonderful conversation?
Yes.
Awesome.
You know, what do you have here? Confirmed already, ready to go. Mr. David Belsky, a flower hire.
There he is with those long locks of beauty. What's up, my friend?
How you guys doing? Great to see you.
Good to see you too. I love that hat. You got the lion, you got the flag. You're giving me some patriotism, some oomph today.
Hey, we're bringing it. We're bringing it. And I've been talking honestly, about a lot this week, as you can tell.
Honestly, I gotta get behind the tie-dye as well, right? They've been bastardized so much. Like, everyone in the cannabis industry likes to say, cannabis is no longer tie-dye and whatever. It can be as well. Why the diss, right? Why do we need to bring one side of the community down just to elevate the other, right?
I mean, I think the world is making tie-dye mainstream. So it's cannabis's actual time to leverage it for whatever purpose they want to.
I love it. I don't know if I'm manly enough to wear tie-dye like you two, but I love it.
Oh, you are. We've met.
My heart, be still. So, Dave, you know, you've been on here before. We had a great conversation, I think, on the state of where cannabis employment was. That was probably a year ago, though. So I think we need some updates on what's going on. But first, just a really swift and quick update on what Flower Hire does, if you don't mind.
Flower Hire focuses on strategic recruiting for the cannabis industry. Our niche historically has been, you know, six-figure cannabis jobs. We've filled nearly 700 positions in the last 4 years across the industry with an average salary well into the six figures. And in the last 12 months, have worked in 12 different states, right? So we've done, you know, C-suite, you know, with some of the larger companies in the industry, and basically any role of strategic value within a vertically integrated cannabis company, of which there are many different types of roles, right? So that's a little bit more about what we are and what we do, if you don't know.
You said well under six figures, all of them?
Well over. The average salary of the positions that we've filled has been about $140,000 in the past few years. And so it's those.
What kind of positions are those?
It's a great question. You know, it's, executive and leadership roles, as well as like administrative, like back office positions, finance, accounting, corporate development, HR, you see like kind of a multi-site or the big facility general manager, whether it's like a retail leader, whether it's a cultivation leader or a manufacturing leader. I mean, those roles definitely pay six figures in cannabis right now.
Ooh, man, am I in the right job? So that's fantastic. So Dave, this is a theme with me, and you know, I don't think I got to ask it to you before, but I always ask executives about, you know, their background, where they're from, you know, and always taking into consideration where they are now. So as we can keep an eye on the perspective that perhaps a legacy grower might have versus an investment banker versus a CPG executive. As you have, you know, been a leader in this space, you know, let me start off with this two-part question. One, have you seen an influx of a certain type of executive to the space more than any others? And two, have you seen a successful type of executive more than any others with their background?
Great question. I think that the most obvious career paths are true, right? CPG, retail, hospitality, agriculture, agricultural processing. Those are the most common. However, on top of that, you tend to find entrepreneurs that enjoy, you know, emerging industries also looking to cannabis. And if they've supported a hypergrowth industry before, that's another interesting pedigree. You know, I think that categorically, you know, what people think will work versus what actually works, you know, is often two different things. And as cannabis has evolved, you know, I think that what I've found universally is that if somebody has never worked at a startup before, and they're also learning cannabis with all of its many quirks and lack of institutions, it's too much, right? So the right candidates for leadership positions have, you know, a background, you know, often in like a larger company, but didn't go the large company route for 25 years. They went and were an entrepreneur. They joined an early stage company. And so they've seen, like, they have the tools in their belt that you see in a company with very established processes. And they've also seen what you have to do to actually build processes when there are none, right? And so those type of backgrounds are, I think, are the ones that actually come in and have been more successful.
Great answer.
What about private versus public companies, right? Are either one better for job seekers? Are salaries comparable, right? Because we consistently hear about the major public companies paying a bunch of money and a bunch of bonuses to their high level executives, right? But not much more than that, right? We kind of know how much the CEO of whatever, Tilray or Canopy or Medman made, but don't really hear much more than that about this difference.
You know, I think that it all depends on if the company has a secure capital situation. And that could happen in a public company. That could happen in a small company just getting off the ground with the right sort of capital and licensing structure, or more often in that sort of growth stage company. And in the last 12 months, about 40% of our business was with multi-state operator, but an even larger section was with a licensed operator that was somewhere between, you know, 50 and 150 employees that, based on the momentum of the business alone, expects to be at 300 to 400 in the next 12 months, right? So those are often private companies. Now, I think there's benefits to working at each type of company, but, you know, it's tough to judge a book by its cover in this industry. Some of the, as you guys chatted about a bit already today, some of the larger companies are not really picnics, right? And some of the smaller ones, you know, are still in the dreamer category. So you really have to, you know, if you're a job seeker looking at this industry, it is perfectly acceptable to understand the financial position of a company, you know, but I would ask.
That is a fantastic point, and actually makes me think a lot about, you know, my personal experience, my friend's experience, right? We've had over the years a lot of small and big companies reach out with what seemed like ridiculous job offers, ridiculous as in crazy high salaries, right? And of course, understanding the capital position of a company is very important to understanding if they can actually pay for the salary or if they are overextending themselves, as we've seen many, many companies in the sector do, right? How would you go at identifying when a salary is too high, right? When is an offer too good?
I don't think there's such a thing. I just think if we're at the point in the industry, though, honestly, if cash is your primary motivator, it's not the right industry for you, right? Because if you have talent and skills, there are other industries that will pay you more in the next 12 months than cannabis will. That being said, it's not always about the money. So if people are excited about the plant, spreading the plant to all of humanity, or excited about doing something and taking their skill set and applying it to a emerging market where it's never been done well before, and they're looking at, you know, their value on a longer time frame, like a decade, they should consider this industry, because I'm a firm believer that the folks that get working in this job now, this industry now, are going to be, whether at any level, are going to be the leaders 5, 10 years from now, regardless, because how recruiting works typically is you want to hire people with industry experience and domain knowledge, mm-hmm. right? You just can't do that. Like, probably close to 100,000 people got a job in cannabis last year. And the majority of those folks were local to where the job was. And often in an area where previously there were not cannabis jobs before. So the people that move now are going to have the opportunity to actually move up the corporate ladder based on the fact they actually have the domain knowledge and the most qualified person for any supervisor or management role that opens up in the next several years. Right? Wow. So that's a different way to look at it.
Totally.
So you mentioned passionate about the plant, you know, and that brings me honestly to a little bit of a side point here. You know, we'll start with your expertise, you know, when we look at the ancillary side of this space, you know, there are MSOs. I think you said that's the majority of who you work with or partially. About maybe 40, not majority.
In the last
40%.
Good portion.
So when you look at ancillary companies, I mean, is there an active strategy to recruit executive management there? Is it as necessary as plant touching operators?
Well, it is necessary. And I think, you know, with the diversity of job type in the industry, if you think about the ancillary world that supports it in terms of goods and services that support all different parts of the cannabis vertical, it's an enormous workforce and potential, economy of scale, right? So I think that it is a similar story in the ancillary world in terms of, you know, selling into emerging and startup markets, right? It's a similar story that previous success, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be successful at commercializing or selling a product into cannabis, right? Like that's actually something that I think will be one of the most in-demand job disciplines in the next 36 months. There are people that can sell products and services to the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
If you think about all of the different types of businesses that are going to be looking to cannabis as another, revenue source, you know, especially when federal normalization happens at some point in our lifetime, right?
You know, kind of shifting thoughts a little bit here. When you look at a new market, so there are tons of new markets that they're fighting for cannabis right now, like Mississippi, just to name one off the top of my head, that's kind of close to medical cannabis. What does that mean for you specifically? And then the industry as a whole, in terms of the amount of jobs that could come, and how long does it take to grow an economy of scale there?
Every state's different, right? I mean, that's like the crazy thing. Like, it's like answering that question universally, like I was the expert, would be improper. You know, that being said, the fact there is a medical program in Mississippi is a great step forward. Look at Louisiana. How long has it been? And now they're finally able to do flower sales in Louisiana. It's been 18 months, right? Or something like that. I don't actually know exactly how long. So you start looking at some similarly minded things, but I think you're entering a phase where there's never been a medical program that's been allowed to launch that has had to scale back. You know, there's never been a recreational program that's launched that hasn't, you know, the states haven't become addicted to tax revenue and the jobs that come from it. So I think it's just, there's so many different types of markets, but when the federal government changes its stance and gets out of the way, I think you'll see such a rapid, like probably within that next legislative period, at least figuring out how to like regulate a recreational market everywhere, right? And that'll be really exciting. And it's that federal government weighing into it that's like the 800-pound gorilla in this whole thing, right? But it's like, oh, federal legalization. Well, what if they allow interstate commerce, which was included, I believe, in both the Democrat and the Republican proposal for these MSOs? You know, all of a sudden, those big greenhouses in California start looking pretty good, right? So who knows, right? Like, and I think that's part of it's par for the course of the people working in the industry. That change is constant, but that is going to impact heavily, and hopefully it's left up to the states to decide what they want to do. And, you know, it'll take so long to normalize as anything else.
You know, one thing that you just said, or you brought up, kind of stuck with me. Over the past couple of years, many, many friends in the industry, and again, going very much back to personal experience, but just, you know, these are my doubts. You know, many friends have told me that the hardest thing to source are good salespeople and people for distribution, right, and supply chain management. And they often ask me, hey, do you know anyone good for sales? I'm launching this brand. I just raised $5 million. I want someone who's great for sales who will help me get into dispensaries or help me get in grocery stores. And my response is always the same, like, I have no clue, dude. Like, and there's five people I can recommend you, and they're all kind of hired. Like, they're already doing a great job somewhere else, right? And is this a sensation of mine, of ours? Are we just not looking in the right places? Or is there really a lack of offer, at least, or talent in that area?
Well, good question. You know, I think for sales specifically, selling a good or product is part of a company's operations. Those jobs are everywhere. And sales is different. You know, selling a retail product in California or a CPG product to retail in California is different than selling wholesale bulk flour or toll processing in California, selling a technology product versus a, you know, ingredient versus a, you know, a lighting automation, it's all different, right? But what I see is that, you know, there is a premium on people that currently have a relationship and success selling into cannabis, because there's not a lot of those, right? There's a ton of salespeople in the world, right? And as it relates to warehousing and inventory and supply chain, I mean, I think this industry has been very much like a, what I call like a plant or like a light industrial facility running a day-to-day operation of something. I am starting to see more of a demand for like what I call spreadsheet people within like a supply chain, whether they come from the accounting side. Spreadsheet people, you know, not me. I'm not one of them.
Oh, me neither. I need a couple of them for sure.
Are you guys doing Miami this year? What?
Yeah, dude. April 20th and 21st. Emphasizing April 20th and 21st. That's the Fountain Blue.
Wow. Yeah. Dude. It wasn't on purpose, though. Like, honestly, yeah. It was just a day that really made sense.
Yeah.
That's like a Tuesday, Wednesday?
Wednesday, Thursday, I think. And then April 19th is our inaugural Psychedelics Capital Conference. Same venue. Going to have a lot of leaders in that space, man.
The first time you've said it out loud, dude.
Is it?
Yeah.
Get it out there.
I haven't told anyone yet.
There we go. Honestly, it's going to be exciting. So obviously you're going to be there, Dave. It's going to happen, but we're looking at Tilray, Sundial, I think Curaleaf, Verano. It's going to be a heck of an agenda, man. So I want everybody in this chat to be there too, and maybe Dave will hire you. Hire you into cannabis.
Let's go.
Awesome. So one more cue from me, and then Javi will wrap us up. Since we are a financially driven company, a financially driven show, we talk about stocks a lot. We talk about companies to watch. So looking ahead, what is one thing that cannabis investors should be, could be, maybe should be excited about for investing in the cannabis space or a specific company, which I know you don't want to do. So maybe the space at whole as we look ahead.
I mean, there's only nowhere to go but up from here is I think the thing that I would say, if you look at the history of the share price of most of the companies in the last 12 months, you know, I mean, it's been considerably higher before. So if you're a believer in the sector long-term, it's a great time to get in. I mean, that would be my, not a financial professional, but that would be what I would say.
Do your due diligence.
Yeah. I have one last one from me as well. As you mentioned earlier, right, the importance of loving the plant in this industry. Cannabis in the workplace. Yes, no, maybe. What's the policy at cannabis companies? This is something, again, that a lot of people ask me, like, dude, is cannabis, you know, smoking weed all day? Of course I work, you know, we work in finance. We're definitely a smoking weed during the day. But some jobs you can definitely do on cannabis.
So I think it's one thing if you're a cannabis company in a medical state that requires you to not have, you know, any type of consumption whatsoever or whatever, all that. But take a step back for a second. We as a society have to get beyond just, oh, I'm fucking high or I'm sober. Because there's a lot of middle ground. And cannabis is a performance enhancer for the right person. So what I preach personally to my organization and to people that ask me is self-awareness, right? If you go into work and you're noticeably intoxicated and you can't do your job, you will be fired. Pretty obvious. However, if it helps you be a better salesperson, it helps you dial in and do your metric stuff and look at spreadsheets, you know, if it helps you be able to sleep better at night so you can have a good day the next morning because you have a big meeting, like it's part of a lifestyle. There's a continuum here and the plan affects everyone differently. So self-awareness is the answer.
One more cue from the chat because Daryl got it in right before the buzzer. Any culinary jobs to develop edibles out there that you work with?
Yes, we have placed, I would say, multiple kitchen manager, director of edibles type roles for sure. So I am David@flowerhire.com. If you want to connect, there it is, David@flowerhire.com. We'll definitely have somebody get back to you.
Awesome. David, awesome conversation as always, my friend. Let's make it happen again soon. I love your updates. I think we're probably going to have a lot to update as we move through 2022.
Hey, I'd love to come back. You guys are doing good work. Thank you.
Did I tap you? We'll see you soon, my friend.
Is it that one? I'm not sure how you spell David, but
no. Awesome. Appreciate it, David. We'll see you soon, my friend.
Bye.
Awesome conversation. Honestly, I love reconnecting with him. There's a lot of expertise that comes to the space, you know, through advisors and service providers, you know, like Flower Hire. They play a massively important role.
And important note, right? And our audience doesn't know this, right? Because, you know, our selection process is internal, right? How we select our guests, right? Why do we have NASDAQ why we have NASDAQ traded companies or Tilray or, you know, MedMen, and have very few service providers is because we cherry pick them very specifically, right? We don't want people pushing their products. We don't want boring stories. We we've tried some, you know, shows.
We're not all like it, but right. David has a lot of knowledge. I have a lot of respect for David and what he does. And he's one of the first to do it on his scale. So I think it's good to hear from service providers like him. But y'all, this was fun. Stay tuned for Money Mitch. He's up next. BZCannabis.com. Buy some tickets. You can meet me, Javier. You can tell us how much you love or hate us. Maybe we'll get Money Mitch to attend.
I'm so excited.
From Colorado.
Fun event. By the way, if you've been to Benzinga events before, this one will be like no other. Like,
it's way
bigger. Floor, going much larger. You know, we have VIP areas. And it's at the Fountain Blue, right? So you're right by the sea, the beautiful Miami Beach Sea, you know, just cool food. We serve an amazing lunch, which I don't know, some people appreciate
hearing about Miami food already.
I really appreciate that there's a bunch of food all the time just going around,
because all right,
stay like standing and active throughout like the 10 hours that you're there each day.
All right. Well, we're going to have some updates on Thursday for speakers, but honestly, everything you said is true, Javi. Dylan Carson wants Money Mitch, though, so let's send him to it.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results, real care, real about recovery.